Welcome to those who are new. I always look forward to the learning that that we get to do together over the course of the semester. And Baruch Hashem, it's been amazing. Thank you. It's been quite a few years now that I've had the schus to come to Stern and to continue to learn with everyone here. And I appreciate you all coming out to be here and giving me the opportunity for us to learn together. I want to try to create a little bit of a bridge between last week's Parsha and this week's Parsha. And I'll begin with a question that Rav Soloveitchik asked about the placement of Kabbalah Satara. Because last week we experienced Kabbalah Satara, last Shabbos we received the Torah. And Rav Soloveitchik noticed in a very obvious way that the Torah places the story of Kabbalah Satara in the context of the end of Parshas Beshalach, where we're introduced to the enemy of Amalek for the first time, and the arrival of Yisro. And the Rav wondered, why is it that Amalek and Yisro are so much present in those moments leading up to Kabbalah Satara? There's a discussion exactly when did Yisro take place? Did it take place? Did Yisro arrive after Kabbalah Satara? Was Yisro inspired from Yitzias Mitzrayim and Kriyas Yamsuf, which led to his arrival before Kabbalah Satara? But again, if you just open the Torah and you read the Torah, at the end of Beshalach, we meet Amalek, then we meet Yisro, and then we receive the Torah. And Rav Soloveitchik wondered, what's the lesson, and why is it that we encounter these two worlds of Yisro, the world of Yisro, the worldview of Yisro, and the worldview of Amalek, on our way to Kabbalah Satara? So the Rav said, and again, anytime you quote the Rav without actually quoting the Rav, you're doing an injustice to his words. But the Rav said, essentially the Torah is introducing us to two responses, two types of a response that one might have to the Jewish people. And the Rav saw it not as just a moment in time, but something that spans all of history and is very much present in the days leading up to the arrival of Mashiach. How do you deal with a Jew? How do you deal with the values of the Jewish people? How do you deal with the ideas of the Jewish people? How do you deal with the success of the Jewish people? There are the Amalekim of the world, and there are the Yisros of the world. There are people who are going to look at Klal Yisrael, like Yisro, and say, you know what, this is an amazing thing that's happening here. Yisro was a person who was very far, in terms of his own life experience, from Jewish values, from what the Jewish people were beginning to become. And yet Yisro, the Kohen Midian, the Archbishop of Midian, had an open mind, and he said, you know what, I see something good developing here. And Yisro decides to respond to that. And Yisro is impressed by the Jewish people. And he comes to check it out, to see what's going on. There are some people who will look at the Jewish people, be impressed by them, and want to join them. And of course, the flip side is very evident to us as well. There are those, again, Amalek is a prototype for those who are going to look at Klal Yisrael, see our success, and come to mock Klal Yisrael, come to challenge Klal Yisrael, come to degrade Klal Yisrael. There are people who, deep down inside, they see, they're impressed by Klal Yisrael. Amalek was impressed by Klal Yisrael. But they're not interested in joining Klal Yisrael or learning from Klal Yisrael or with Klal Yisrael. They just want to come to give trouble to Klal Yisrael. And Rav Soloveitchik said, on our way to Kabbalah Satara, we have to realize that as we become the Jewish people, that's how it's always going to be. Some people are going to want to join us. Some people are going to want to learn from us. Some people are going to thank us. Some people are going to be impressed by us. And other people are going to roll their eyes and have cynical comments and mock the Jewish people. There will be the Amalekim of the world. And the Rav again said that's true on the way to Mashiach. On the way to Mashiach, there will be people as time unfolds who like us more and more and more and start to realize what a remarkable people we are. And there will be people who, as we get closer and closer to the end, just want to extinguish that flame called the Jewish people once and for all. That's how the Rav more or less set up, so to speak, the contrast between the Yisro and Amalek on the way to Kabbalah Satara. But I want to, in a similar fashion, but in a slightly different approach, I want to think about the contrast of Yisro and Amalek, again, surrounding Kabbalah Satara, surrounding the birth of Klal Yisrael in a different way. And I want to share with you a story that I heard just recently, such a beautiful story. About 2 years ago, Rav Binyamin Kamenetsky passed away. Rav Binyamin Kamenetsky, the son of Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky, was the founder, the architect, the builder of the South Shore Yeshiva of Tag, the girls' school as well. When Rabbi Binyamin passed away, the menahal of the yeshiva, Rabbi Hanina Hertzberg, was menahal for 50 years or so in the yeshiva. He was asked to give a hesped. And he said, I want to tell you one unbelievable story about Rabbi Binyamin that I experienced firsthand. And this is what Rabbi Hertzberg said. He said, it was a freezing cold morning. A freezing cold morning. He said, I got up extra early that morning. I needed to stop off at the yeshiva to pick up my talis and tefillin. I was on the way. I was traveling out of town for a bris. And I got to the yeshiva and I unlocked the building that morning very, very early. And when I walked inside, it was like 5 in the morning, I saw Rav Binyamin sitting in the Beis Medrash, wearing his coat. It was freezing in the building. Holding a warm cup of coffee, sitting over a sefer. And I approached Rav Binyamin, I approached Rabbi Kamenetsky, and I asked him, I said, Rabbi, what are you doing here so early in the morning? He didn't think it was his typical practice. So he said they were predicting what a freezing morning was going to be, like all the weather reports these last couple of days. They were predicting it's going to be so cold, and I know it takes some time for the building to warm up. And I wanted that when the Talmidim get to yeshiva this morning, I wanted to make sure that the building was comfortable for the Talmidim. So Rabbi Binyamin got up hours early, and came to yeshiva hours early. He always came early, but he came especially early that morning. And he turned on the heat, and he sat there. I guess it didn't make sense for him to go home at that point. And he sat there in the Beis Medrash, bundled up with a warm cup of coffee, sitting over a sefer, a Rebbe's expression of his love for his Talmid. Unbelievable. Beautiful story. This Rabbi Hertzberg passed away about a month ago, very tragically, or suddenly. And Rabbi Hertzberg's son gave a hesped. And he said that when my father gave that hesped for Rabbi Binyamin after he passed away, I asked him afterwards, just out of a curiosity for the context of the story, whose bris were you traveling to that morning? You said that you got up early that morning, you stopped off at yeshiva to pick up your talis and tefillin, you had to travel out of town for a simcha, for a bris. So his son asked him, who was it? I don't remember such a simcha. Whose simcha was it that wintry morning? And he said his father avoided the question for a while. And he pressed him on it. He asked him again, whose simcha was it? Until finally, Rabbi Hertzberg told his son, he said, very humbly and very honestly, he said, the truth is I didn't have a simcha that morning. He said, I also got up at 5 o'clock in the morning that day to go to yeshiva, to turn on the heat, to make sure the Talmidim would be comfortable when they came for davening that day. And Rav Binyamin, in his unbelievable love for the Talmidim, beat me to it. He got there before me. So his son said, so why didn't you just tell the story? Why didn't you just... When you gave the hesped for Rabbi Binyamin, you could have told the story. No one would have thought you were a Baal Gaiva. So he said in a very unassuming way, he said, why was it relevant for me to share that information? I was talking about the love that Rabbi Binyamin Kamenetsky had for his Talmidim. Why was it necessary for me to include myself in that way in the story? I was just a footnote in the story. When I heard this story, this double story, I guess you could call it, recently, I was thinking about the types of people in the world, right, who like to get involved in situations better. And I was thinking about it in the context of Yisrael, in the context of the relationship between Moshe Rabbeinu and Yisrael. It's such a pella. Let's ask a simple question, a very simple question. What was the connection between Moshe Rabbeinu and Yisrael? How could it be, to say it very straight, how could it be that Moshe Rabbeinu, whatever we picture, however, you know, whatever our image of Moshe Rabbeinu is, I imagine it's a pretty holy image, how could it be that Moshe Rabbeinu married the daughter of Yisro? How could that be? What was the common denominator between the two of them? What a strange shidduch that the Archbishop of Midian, who is described by Chazal as having tried out every Avodah Zarah in the world, according to the Medrash Mechilta, that Moshe Rabbeinu shows up and, you know, she's a nice girl, so why not? Did Moshe not have a sense of where he was heading? He knew where he was heading. He just risked his life for his people. He had a little bit of a sense of where he was heading at this point. How could it be such a strange shidduch? What's the common denominator that these families could come together, that Yisro could be the father-in-law of Moshe Rabbeinu? This was the question that at the very end of Rabbi Nachman of Breslov's life was a major topic of conversation at the Shabbos table. If you look in source number 1 on the page in front of you, I hope there's enough to go around. Leil Shabbos from the Chaim Oran. Chaim Oran is a biographical volume recorded by Rabbi Nassan, the Talmud of Rabbi Nachman of Breslov. And you can see that this story is from the year Tav Kuf Ayin, which is the year 1810, which was the year Rabbi Nachman passed away. This must have been shortly before he passed away, the summer right before he passed away. So Rabbi Nassan writes here in Os Reish Dal in B'chayim Oran in source number one, Leil Shabbos Parshas Chukas Ubalak Yud Beis Tammuz Tav Kuf Ayin, the year 1810. Rabbi Nachman lived a very short life from 1772 to 1810. Towards the mamash, the end of his life. So Rabbi Nassan says, we were sitting at the Shabbos table, V'toma al Atzma, and Rabbi Nachman, who would sometimes speak about himself and ask questions on himself, Toma al Atzma, he questioned himself, Al she'ose tamid dvarim mishunim v'nifla'im midas b'nei adam. Rabbi Nachman said in the presence of his chassidim, his talmidim, why do I do so many weird things? Why do I do such strange things? And he gave an example. Al she'hu tamid na v'nad mi makum l'makum. Why am I always wandering? I could set up shop, I could have a normal yeshiva, I could have a chassidic court. Why am I always, I'm in one place and then I travel to a different place and then I'm in a different place, and it lists all the places that he went. Went from here to there, finally comes to Breslov and then eventually to Uman, and even in Uman, he says about himself, he says, in Uman, I didn't set up shop amongst the people who were my chassidim, who were my talmidim, who were the B'nai Torah. Rabbi Nachman spent a lot of time in a very peculiar way amongst people who were irreligious in Uman. People he would think that he would want to disassociate himself with, those were the chevra he was hanging out with. And he asked, why do I do that? Why am I always involved in unusual activities that, you know, that raise people's eyebrows? Like, this is where Rabbi Nachman wants to situate himself. So Rabbi Nassan responded, where it's bolded, Anisi va'amarti lo, halo mipnei ma nosa Moshe isha mibinos yisro daika. He says, Rabbi, I'll ask you a question that I also find to be very strange. How could it be that Moshe, the transmitter of Torah to Klal Yisrael, the one who would receive the Torah directly from Hashem, how could it be that Moshe Rabbeinu made a shidduch with Yisrael, that he married the daughter of Yisrael? How could such a thing be? And he explains in the brackets, V'kavanasi ha'yapashut, what I was trying to say, kachu minhagi Hashem Yisbarach, this is the way that Hashem runs the world, and the tzaddikim operating, wanting to be like Hashem, sometimes also follow this pattern of what? Lechaber shnei hafachim, to bring together two opposites. Hashem is very good at also doing a lot of strange things. Hashem sometimes unites things that initially would think there's no way those two things could work together. Whether it's Hashem and humanity, Hashem and the Jewish people, giving the Torah to Basar Vadam, the angels put up a fight. Hashem, why would you give the Torah to humans? Give the Torah to angels? So Hashem also sometimes hangs out with unusual characters, if you could say that about ourselves. So Rabbi Nassan says, what I was saying back to Rabbi Nachman, you think it's strange that you hang out with unusual people? We have a history of this. Moshe Rabbeinu hung out with Yisro, who was the Archbishop of Midian. A little bit of an unusual place for Moshe to set up shop and certainly to marry. So he says, he continues where it's bolded on the page in front of you, Acher kach ana va'amar laha'olam. So Rabbi Nachman, as this discussion was unfolding, turned to the people seated at that Shabbos table in 1810. And he said to them, Hishmatim ma shehiksha. Do you hear what my beloved Rabbi Nassan is asking? Do you hear this question? Such an important question. Halo hiksha kushya gadola. My Talmud Rabbi Nassan is asking one of the biggest questions. The merger of Moshe Rabbeinu and Yisro, it's one of the biggest questions, one of the biggest mysteries. And Rabbi Nassan concludes the passage by saying, all Shabbos, Rabbi Nachman kept coming back to it. He kept asking people, do you have an answer to this question? Do you have an answer to this question? Moshe and Yisro, can anyone explain Moshe and Yisro? Such a strange merger. And Rabbi Nachman, I did a little editing in the paragraph, but Rabbi Nassan says Rabbi Nachman began multiple times over Shabbos. He would begin a sentence to start to explain something, and then he would stop. As if he wanted to be Megala the Sod, to reveal the secret, but then he felt the people were unworthy of hearing the secret. But he kept coming back to it. What a big question Rabbi Nassan asked. How could it be that Moshe and Yisro came together? It's a big question. It is a big question. What's the common denominator between the worldview of Moshe Rabbeinu and Yisro? And when you understand what the common denominator is, it highlights how important that common ground must be, because there was a lot that they didn't have in common. But you know why they were attracted to each other? You know why Moshe and Yisro felt a connection to each other? They were both people who knew how to look at a situation and try to make the situation better. They were people who liked to get involved and to help. They were helpers. Fred Rogers, Mr. Rogers, as he's known to people in the world, Fred Rogers is an amazing person. Was an amazing, but no longer alive. Fred Rogers was an amazing person. He was also a priest, not of Midian, but he was also a priest. And he's someone who, there's a lot of literature, books being written about him now. He was an amazing person. He was ahead of his time in his desire to shape and to mold television into something wholesome and valuable instead of something that's poisonous and destructive, was so far ahead of its time. And the sensitivity and the thoughtfulness and the care, the way that he wanted to educate children through the medium of TV, of entertainment, but in an educational way, was remarkable. And Mr. Rogers, there's so many Torah lessons that can be culled from the worldview of Mr. Rogers. But one thing that he would often say, and I think about it, and I'm thinking about it specifically in this context of Moshe and Yisroel, Mr. Rogers said as a child, when he would encounter frightening things in the world, and you have to understand how courageous he was on his TV show, and to talk about real things, to talk about the separation of different races, to talk about tragic things, to talk about death. I mean, he was teaching little kids real stuff in his very sensitive and deep way. So he said a lot of the chizuk that he got to be able to talk about real things and to believe that he could make a difference in the world, he got from his mother. Because when he was a kid, he said when he would see scary things in the world and he was frightened, his mother used to always say to him, "Fred, you have to look for the helpers. There are always people who are helping. It's true, there are people in the world who are dangerous and destructive and can try to harm you. But if you look around and if you look with a good eye, there are always people, no matter what the situation is. There's people who are complaining, there's people who are bickering, there's people who are making things worse. But there are also people who are always looking for ways to make situations better." And that's who Yisro was, and that's who Moshe Rabbeinu was. In source number 2, the Gemara in Sota tells us that where do we first encounter Yisro? Beneath or in between the lines of the pages of the Torah. Paro had 3 advisors. When Paro was plotting the most evil plot for the destruction and the enslavement of the Jewish people, before we really were the Jewish people, the family of Yaakov. Says the Gemara in Sota in source number 2, Amar Bichia bar Abba, Amar Bissimai, Shalosha Hayu Baoso Eitza. Paro sought the advice of 3 individuals, Bilam, V'Iyov, V'Yisro. Characters that we know from elsewhere in Tanakh, Bilam, Iyov, and Yisro. Bilam, Shiyaatz, Bilam, who said, deal with the Jews in the harshest of ways, Neharag. His punishment was, you know how many Jews were killed because Bilam didn't take a stand against Paro? So Bilam would meet a tragic end. Bilam would be killed. Iyov Sheshasak. Iyov, who was too afraid to take a stand, to challenge Paro, or to at least respond the way Yisro did, as we'll see in a second. Iyov, who was silent in the face of evil. Nidon B'Yisurin. We know the Sefer of Iyov. Iyov becomes the most afflicted person in Tanakh, the ultimate example of the Baal Yisurim, the one who suffers. You remained quiet, you're going to have to suffer. Yisro Shebarach, Yisro, you might say Yisro was a coward, he ran away, he didn't really take a stand. Maybe he couldn't confront Paro, maybe that would have cost him his life, but he said, I can't be a part of this. I see evil, and I can't be a part of this. It could be he was an advisor for Paro for many years. It could be he had climbed the ranks of society. But he threw it all away because he said, this is wrong. He was a person who had a conscience. And therefore Yisro ran away, and Zachu mibnei banav sheyashu b'lishchas agazis. And the reward was because his advice was to what? To take a stand by running away, and to show power, I cannot support such a decision. His descendants would sit in the lishchas agazis on the Sanhedrin, and would be a source of guidance to the whole world, to the Jewish people, and by extension, to the whole world. Yisro was a person who had an ability, unlike Bilam, who was willing to win over Paro by siding with Paro and committing himself to that evil. Unlike Iyov, who didn't know how to help the situation. That was Yisro taking a stand. That was a courageous thing for Yisro to do. That was his way of standing up to an evil person and being able to try in some way to maybe change Paro's way of thinking. To show Paro that I can't even be near you. That's how sickened I am by you. Did it help? Paro, of course, in the end would enslave Klal Yisro. But you see the underpinnings of who Yisro was. He was a person who wanted to make a really bad situation a little bit better. Moshe Rabbeinu, of course, many times in the Torah, that's how we encounter Moshe. We meet Moshe trying to save a Jew, being beaten, taken advantage of by a Mitzri. We find Moshe Rabbeinu coming to the well and saving a group of strangers, Yisro's daughters. And therefore, by the time he meets up with Yisro, Yisro says, tell me a little bit about this guy. Well, he's a person who likes to help. He's a person who tries to help people who are in trouble. He's a person who has a good moral compass. Yisro says, this is the type of person I want to make a shidduch with. This is the type of person I want to be part of our family. And therefore, it's no surprise, on our way to Kabbalah Satorah, in last week's parsha, as Yisro joins the Jewish people because he has the ability to recognize there's something good that's happening here, and he didn't just show up to say, I want to just join the winning team. He came to help. And how did Yisro help? He joins the Jewish people, and he revolutionizes the way that Moshe Rabbeinu runs the government. Yisro comes and he says, Moshe Rabbeinu, we got to make a few changes here. And he offers advice, and it's really good advice. And he revolutionizes the way that a Beis Din functions on every level, on every single level. He helps Moshe. He's a person who likes to help. Again, like Mrs. Rogers told the little Fred Rogers, look for the helpers. Those are the types of people you want to be around. The people who are looking at the situation and want to get involved, and want to help. I want to take a situation, even if it's not the worst situation, but to try to make it better. There are people who complain, and there are people who help. I want to share with you an amazing insight from Rav Moshe Sternbach, Shlita, one of the Gedolim, one of the great rabbis of Eretz Yisrael today, in his Sefer Tam Vidas in source number 3. One of the names of Yisro was the name Yeser. Yisro, Rashi says in last week's parsha, had 7 names. One of the names was Yeser. Why was Yisro called Yeter? Yeser? Rashi explains, She Yiter Parsha Achas B'Torah. Because he added a parsha to the Torah. Yisro got his name in the Torah. He got his words in the Torah. How does Yisro begin his speech? A parsha, a section of Torah was added because of Yisro. So what section was added? Where does that section begin? If I were to ask you to open the Torah and to point to the beginning of Yisro's words, so you'd open it up and you'd see Yisro saying to Moshe Rabbeinu, Moshe, you know, the system that you have in place is going to make you and the people really tired. It's not a great system. And then you're going to find the line where Yisro says to his son-in-law, Moshe Rabbeinu, you see it in source number 3 in the bold print, right? Vayomer Chosein Moshe Elav, Lo Tov Hadavar Asher Ata Osa. It's not, the system you have in place is not a good thing. What's interesting, says Rav Moshe Sternbach, is that when you look in Rashi, you have it on the page in front of you, he quotes it here, V'nei Zehu Haschalas Dibura Shel Yisro. The first words of Yisro are Yisro saying to Moshe, Lo Tov Hadavar Asher Ata Osa. Your system stinks. You don't know how to run your government. Moshe, this is a disaster. This is a mess. That's Yisro's introduction. That's how Yisro begins his speech. And yet Rashi says Rav Sternbach, that he's called Yeter, She Yiter Parsha Achas B'Torah Va'ata Secheze. What Parsha was added? What words did Yisro add to the Torah? Va'ata Secheze. What's the end of that pasuk? Va'ata Secheze Mikol Am Anshe Chayel. Yirei Elokim, Anshe Emes, Sone Batza. What's that pasuk describing? When Yisro gives Moshe advice, here's what you need to do. Use your ability to discern, and Moshe, select people who are God-fearing, who are honest, who are repulsed by taking bribes. He gives them advice of how to restructure the government. Why does Rashi say that the parsha that Yisro added to the Torah is Va'ata Secheze? Why doesn't Rashi say, asks Rav Sternbach, that the parsha that Yisro added to the Torah, why not quote the opening words of Yisro? Why not say that the parsha that Yisro added is the parsha of Lo Tov Hadavar Asher Ata Osa? And Rav Sternbach says a very insightful thing. It's true, Yisro's words of complaining against Moshe are also in the Torah, but that's not what Yisro added to the Torah. The fact that Yisro showed up and said, this is a terrible system. So you know, we say to people who come and complain, Shkoyach, thank you so much. You didn't help us at all. You just made us feel bad. But if you show up and you say, there's a problem here and I want to fix, I want to help, I have an idea. So then you've added something to the Torah. Then you've added something to Klal Yisrael. Rashi, in a very subtle way, is saying to us, you know why he's called Yisro? Not because he said, Lo Tov Hadavar Asher Ata Osa. Anyone can say that. That's cheap, that's easy. Complaining is very, very easy to do. But to be able to say, hold on a second, I want to help. I have a plan. I have an idea here. Says Rav Sternbach, Muvuar, She'ein shivcho shal adam b'chachmaso. You're not a big chacham if you show up. Lishlol esakayam. To negate that which is in place. To say that someone else's system is bad is not saying very much. Ki im bizos yishalal hamishalal. What should a person be proud of? Ba'atzaso litakein hadavar. If you can look at a situation, even if it's not such a bad situation, but you're already thinking, how can I help? How can I make this situation better? That's something to be proud of. That's something to celebrate being added to the Torah. Rav Sternbach goes on and he tells the story. He says that when the Imre Emes, when the Ger Rebbe, the son of the Sfas Emes, the third Ger Rebbe, the Imre Emes, passed away in 1948. When the Imre Emes was at the great gathering of rabbis in Warsaw, the Agudas HaRabbanim, there were people who came to protest. And they said, the Aguda doesn't do enough on behalf of Eretz Yisrael. And the Imre Emes got up, and he shared this insight. The same insight that Rav Sternbach is sharing. He said, for people to show up and to complain that we don't do enough for Eretz Yisrael doesn't help anyone. You want to join us and offer suggestions, how to make the situation better? Then there's something to talk about. The Parsha of Yisro is Va'ata Techezeh. Moshe, here's how we can restructure. Now you're saying something. It's very easy for anyone to show up and to negate and to pick it and to say this is bad and that is bad and to complain. It's very, very easy to sit in the back of the shul and complain about why the rabbi is no good and the board is no good, why the school is no good, why this is no good. So get involved. Get involved. And if you think it is good but you can make it better, so also, be the type of person who's proactive in trying to get involved with things. And now we're starting to understand perhaps the contrast of the world of Yisro and the world of Amalek. Yisro was the type of person who looks at a situation and he says, okay, what can we do here? How can we make the most of the situation? When he was facing Paro, it meant running for his life. That was a way of taking a stand. When he saw the Jewish people thriving, he didn't just show up to join the winning team. He said, let me get involved. How can I help? How can I assist? Maybe I have a different perspective as Kohen Midyan, as an outsider. With a bird's eye view, maybe I see things differently. And you know what? Moshe was very appreciative of that. What about Amalek? Amalek is the exact opposite. Amalek is the paradigm of those who stand on the side and just complain and complain and complain and tear things down with no intention of building anything wholesome in its place. Amalek sees a Klal Yisrael that's starting to rise up, that's trying to make the world a better place. Amalek feels bad for themselves. And they don't come and say, you know what? Okay, so we're running a little behind schedule. Let's join this chevra and get involved. No, Amalek comes, and they just want to suck the life out of Klal Yisrael. This Shabbos is already Shabbos. Shabbos Mevarchim Chodesh Adar Aleph. We're starting to move towards Purim. Before you know, we have two others this year, Adar Aleph and Adar Sheni. But we're moving towards Purim, and it's time to think about Amalek, because Amalek is the enemy of Purim. Rav Kook has an unbelievable insight into what it means to destroy and to erase Amalek. How do you deal with cynical people? How do you deal with Amalekim? So Amalek comes and tries to tear you down. So what do you do? What would be the natural human response? You try to tear me down, I'm going to tear you down first. And that's what the Torah seems to say. Erase Amalek. Amalek's trying to erase you. Amalek's trying to erase Hashem's presence in the world. How do we fight back? We erase Amalek. That's how we fight back. Says Rav Kook, it's not enough to erase Amalek. And I'll show you that the Torah doesn't want us to just erase Amalek. Rav Kook, in source number 4 in the Moedei HaRaya, a collection by Rav Moshe Tzvi Neria of the Torahs of Rav Kook, teachings of Rav Kook, he said Rav Kook once explained how Mechiyas Amalek ideally works. Yes, we want to destroy Amalek, we want to remove the bad guys, but it's not enough to just remove the bad guys. Says Rav Kook, the end of the first line, Kach Shaninu Behilchos Shabbos. What is erasing in the context of malacha on Shabbos? One of the 39 malachos, one of the 39 forbidden forms of what? Of constructive behavior on Shabbos is erasing. But what type of erasing is a malacha on Shabbos? What type of erasing is forbidden in the simplest and most strictest sense of the word? So the Gemara tells us, it's not every type of erasing. It's not erasing for the sake of erasing. The Gemara tells us, Stam Mechika Kilkelhu, plain erasing is considered destructive, not constructive. On Shabbos, we're not allowed to do constructive malacha. So just erasing something, destroying something, that's not the malacha of erasing. You know what type of erasing is the prohibited erasing on Shabbos? Because it's constructive? Erasing mochik al manas lichtov, with the intention to write something in its place. That's the type of erasing you're not allowed to do on Shabbos, as one of the 39 malachos of Shabbos. So says Rav Kook, the Torah wants us to erase Amalek, but the goal should be that by erasing Amalek, something positive is written in its place. That's real erasing. Real erasing is mochik al manas lichtov. Says Rav Kook where it's bolded. Mikan yesh lomod legabi mitzvos mechikas amalik. When it comes to the eradication of amalik, al yachshov hachoshev ki lefaneinu mitzvos mechia greta. Don't think that the mitzvah is simply to what? To remove, to erase, and then you just leave a big void. That's not helping enough. That's the person who's just complaining. That's only half the job. Says Rav Kook, mitzvos mechika vasulo, that's not it. Shareka amur zo rak mikalkeles. Because then you just become another what? Another person who's tearing down, who's destroying. Okay, you're destroying evil and Amalek is destroying good. I understand, but that's not enough, says Rav Kook. Says Rav Kook, if the purpose of Amalek is to what? Is to destroy our relationship with Hashem, we have to remove Amalek and build our relationship with Hashem. He says where it's underlined, l'chein mitzvas mechias Amalek, hi mechika amenas lichtov. What a beautiful idea. Erase Amalek to write something in their place. Remove the bad guys, remove the Amalek, the evil way of thinking in the world. And that's not enough. And fill that void with what? With goodness. Try to fill that void with something positive. Amanas l'takin olam b'malchus Hashem. Mechika shebemechoma tivu'ena osios kodesh. Remove the negative letters of Amalek and write the name of God in its place. Don't just write Haman on the bottom of your shoe and stamp it out, so to speak, on Purim. But find ways to what? To write meaningful Divrei Torah and disperse them, L'chavad Purim. Bring more godliness into the world. It's not just enough to remove Amalek from the world, but to try to fill that void with something wholesome, and to try to fill it with something positive. That's the contrast, perhaps. An answer to Rav Soloveitchik's question. Maybe that's the contrast. On the way to Kabbalah Satorah, becoming the Jewish people, are you going to be an Amalek type of person? Not just in terms of, are you impressed by the Jewish people and do you want to join us? But it's more of a broader attitude. Are you the type of person who always sees with a negative eye and says, this isn't good and that's not good. No, what are you doing about it? I don't know, I'm too busy to do anything about it. Or are you like the Yisros of the world? And perhaps this is the secret of the partnership. Again, it's a big secret. It's a deep mystery. It's not going to solve it all with one simple idea. Right? But Rabbi Nachman was so captivated by the question. What's the common? There's so much that Yisro and Moshe, again, superficially don't have in common. But you know what they both had in common? When we first meet them, they're people who are trying to make a bad situation better. And that's an amazing midah. And that's enough to justify the merger of a Yisro, Kohen Midian, and Moshe Rabbeinu, who the Navi says, Zichru Torah Moshe. The entire Torah is called by Moshe Rabbeinu. And now we come, at the very end of the shir, to this week's parsha. You know, when Mrs. Samantha asked me for a title, usually the way it goes, I avoid her for a couple of weeks, to be honest, because I don't know what I'm going to speak about yet. Eventually, I have to submit a title. Sometimes I know what I'm actually going to talk about. Sometimes I have like a kernel of an idea, and I pray to Hashem that we'll be able to make a shir connects to the title. Okay, so maybe now we can finally come to the, are you a forward-thinking Jew? And what I meant by that is the following insight in this week's parsha. The opening words of this week's parsha. Ve'eila ha-mishpatim asher tasim lifneihem. Ve'eila ha-mishpatim asher tasim lifneihem. The Torah and its principles, the values of the Torah, the mishpatim, the mitzvos, the laws, the rules of the Torah are supposed to be lifneihem, before you. Says Rashi, one of several interpretations the Gemara has, lifneihem, it should be before you, v'lo lifnei goyim, v'lo lifnei akum. That if you have a problem, take it to a Jewish court. Don't go to a secular court. Lifneihem, bring it before Jewish judges, v'lo lifnei, not before the umas ha'olam. And Rashi says, even if they have the same way of looking at the situation, we take our business to Jewish court. Okay, it's a big parsha, a lot of halachos, there are exceptions, fine. Rav Yisrael of Rizhin, the holy Rizhner, as he was known, the Heilige Rizhner, one of the tzaddikim who passed away in 1850, lived in a palace, tried to restore the royal appearance of the Jewish people. that people shouldn't look at the Jewish people as a downtrodden nation, but to see us as the noble class, very unique tzaddik. Rabbi Yisrael of Rizhin, when he would read this pasuk, would say, "Ve'ela mishpatim asher tasim lifneihem." These are the ordinances, these are the laws of the Torah that need to be placed before you. Lifneihem v'lo la'achareihem. Before you and not behind you. Make sure the Torah is before you and not behind you. And one of the Hasidim of Yisrael of Rizhin, the Holy Rizhner, explained. What did the Rebbe mean? He would say, Lifneihem v'lo la'achareihem. Lifneihem v'lo la'achareihem. What does it mean, Lifneihem v'lo la'achareihem? This Chassid of the Rizhner explained. When a Jew is making a cheshbon ha-nefesh, when you're assessing anything, whether you're assessing your own life, whether you're trying to size up a situation, is this a good situation, is this not a good situation? The Rishner was saying, the Torah is telling us here, ve'eila ha-mishpatim asher tasim lifneim. Are you going to be the type of person who is forward-thinking, who looks at the situation and doesn't get stuck on, well, you know, there's all these problems based on what's been until now. Am I able to look past that? Am I able to look towards the future, set a goal, and be excited about, okay, you know, yeah, maybe behind us, there's some baggage. But lifneim, let's try to just get involved in doing more good, asei tov, not so much achareim, sur meira. Not to worry about so much the past, not to certainly to complain about all the opportunities you didn't have, lashon avar. But let's talk about right now, what can we do right now? How can we march forward? Am I the type of person like a Yisro who's forward-thinking, who says, you know what, Klal Yisro has a little bit of a situation here, I'm going to plot ahead, I'm going to start thinking how we can make the situation better? Or am I the type of person who just sees all the past problems and says, nah, given the history, there's no way to make this better? The Rizhner used to say, that's what Hashem is telling us in these words in this week's Parsha, Lifneihem, 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 not La'achareihem. Be progressive in your thinking. Try to make the situation better. There are people who are active, there are people who are always looking to help. You see these types of people. There's people who are always, they'll always get involved. And there's other people who sometimes are more hesitant to get involved. But I think as we begin a new semester together, I think it's a great time to think, what do I want to bring to the table? It's easy to show up, you know, whether you're coming back to CERN or you're just coming to CERN for the first time, it's easy to say, oh, you know, this is not so good and that's not so good. Or you could say, you know what, there's a lot of good things, and there's a lot of things, I have ideas, I want to make them better. There are people here who are interested in your ideas. To be trying to constantly move the bar, to move, so to speak, the yardstick forward and forward and forward, lifneihem, 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 to keep marching forward. I want to end with the final source, I know we only have 2 minutes left. But the Piazetzner Rebbe, in his Sav Vizirus, in his diary that was found after the war, very personal comments, the Piazetzner Rebbe, Hashem should avenge his blood, died al Kiddush Hashem. In the Tzav Aziruz, he says the following, and I'll paraphrase. He says, if a person wants to make sure, and you should look at the words inside, they're powerful words. If a person wants to make sure that over the course of a lifetime, you don't get stuck in the same place for way too long. The mashal he gives, he says, if you're going to be 70 years old one day, and you don't want to look back and feel that you're the same as you are on the day of your bar mitzvah, and this crowd obviously will say bat mitzvah. And he says, if you size yourself up and you say, my name is Reuven, and this crowd will say Rachel. You say to yourself, you know, I want to be, this is the Rachel that I am today, this is the Rivka that I am today. What do I want Rivka to look like in a year from now? What do I want my life to look like in a year from now? Says the PSS Rebbe, you have to have goals for yourself. Where am I trying to get to? The famous conversation between Alice and the Cheshire Cat in Alice in Wonderland, where she says, like, you know, can you show me how to get there? He's like, well, where are you trying to get to? If you don't know where you're trying to go, then you can just go anywhere and I guess you'll get somewhere. Where do you want to go? What are your goals? What are your plans? What are your aspirations? To be forward thinking. Where am I trying to reach? And he says, God forbid, if you don't, you'll turn around and your life will pass you by and you'll say, you know, I'm like the same person again. And I live the same year over and over again. And he says, the contrast, of course, is Avram. But Avram Zake, and Avram grew old, Baba Yamim, and all of his days were unique and were special. Avram was trying to accomplish something. He was a doer, he was a helper, he was someone who was trying to shape the world. And again, in the context of the Jewish women who I'm standing in front of, we'll put it in the context of Sarah. Sarah Imenu, how do we sum up the life of Sarah? Vayihyu chaye Sarah, shnei chaye Sarah. Why the repetition? Rav David Pavarsky, And the Panovich Yeshiva explained, Vayuchai Sara, Shnei Chai Sara. Vayuchai Sara, 127 years, Shnei Chai Sara. All the years of Sara's life were unique, were original, were different, were growing. Right? And that's the legacy of Avram and Sara. And that's the legacy of the Jewish people. And that's the lesson that we learn from Yisro. The Parsha of Kabbalah Satorah is named for Yisro. Think about that. Someone who came, who showed up when it wasn't popular and got involved. So Mirtz Hashem, as we begin a beautiful semester together, I give you a bracha. You should be proactive. You should be helpers. You should be doers. You should be thinkers. You should be forward thinkers. People who are trying to make a difference. Make sure that all of your Torah is lifneim, lifneim, lifneim. And then Mirtz Hashem, you'll have a beautiful semester ahead of yourselves. Thank you so much for being here, and I look forward to continuing to learn together.